starting right now, and it looks good. And hopefully if this goes well, this will be up online on the ministry website. And anybody can access this, and I'll send that link out with the Sunday school notes. So, I'm going to try this one in this pocket.
Do I have my... Brian, are you up there in the sound booth?
No, Brian.
Okay, well, we'll...
We'll adjust.
Okay, we're going to... Hey, y'all, we're going to transition here. We're going to go from the... We've been talking about the Ache for Fame and the impact significance, and we're going to try and transition into sort of a new topic today, just sort of introductory and kind of get everybody thinking along those ways. So let me just kind of tell you again what we're doing, why we're here, and kind of where I'm trying to just... we're trying to pilgrimage through, and I've just entitled this working title here of this class, The Unspeakable Ache, and here's the thesis. Pretty much everything we struggle with, the issues, the sadnesses, the confusion, our struggles, our deep struggles with fear and shame and guilt, our obsessions, our compulsions, our relational battles, our disappointments, our spiritual confusion, our malaise, all of that kind of tangled jungle of the inner life, when you factor it all down and peel it all apart, it's all connected to the ache. And it's the ache for a life that we don't really know, but we long for. And we don't really know what to do with that. And that is the dilemma. That's what I call the human condition. Here's a simple way to say it. We meet life and we're profoundly disappointed. We meet life and we're mortally wounded. You know, and it's a pain you really can't ignore. We have to do something with it. You know, when you get a toothache, you know how all thoughts move towards the toothache? A few weeks ago I was splitting wood and I'm just, you know, pretending like I'm 25, which I'm not anymore, and I'm just split. You know, my back's a little tired, and I just keep going at it, you know, keep whacking. And when I finally came up, I'm like, And about 6 hours later, I went, oh, you know, and I had really irritated one of the joints in my back, and I had to go get physical therapy. But I want to tell you, I was incapacitated for a few days. Y'all have experienced that? And it's just like everything you do, just the simple stuff, you can't ignore it. The ache, the pain that comes from the disillusionment that we have with life, what we do with that pain, because we can't ignore it, pretty much ends up being the plot line of our story. That's why this is so important. One more introductory point. The unspeakable ache can be really confusing because it doesn't come in one flavor. It doesn't come like, you know, vanilla. It's like walking into an ice cream shop. It comes in different colors. And so what I want to do is sort of take up the ache, pull it out, and sort of parse it like an English major would, trying to analyze a sentence, and see if we can't put some words to it. And then along the way, open up the Bible, open up the scriptures, and go, what? How does this touch that? How does this connect here? The four more obvious aches we're speaking about are the ache for fame, the ache for intimacy, the ache for beauty and strength, and then we'll talk about the ache for adventure and quest. And then we'll move on to a couple of the deeper aches. But that's later on down the line. Let's start with how I normally do each week and how the aches surface this week. Just a couple of stories along this line. And this is not with a movie, this is a book. Have you ever read a book or watched a movie that for whatever reason you keep going back to? Have you all ever had that experience? Like, you just keep, and you're not even sure why you do it. You just know at some level, like you've read the book, and it's like, oh, I can't pick it up again yet because I got, you know what I mean? I got to wait a certain amount of time, and then I'm going to go back and enjoy it. And it's like your little secret treasure. Or maybe there's a movie like that. You just know at some point, oh, if I just put that in, it'll sort of make sort of life go away, or it'll call out something in me that I just long to experience again. That is perhaps, if the idea of the unspeakable ache doesn't connect, or you really trouble clicking in here, That's another way to click in. Because what you're clicking in there is the unspeakable ache. Even if you don't know what it is, it's something that calls out to you in those books or movies or stories. And a great question to ask at that point is, what am I looking for? What am I searching for? What am I hoping to find here?
This week, I've had the same experience. I went back to a book that I've read now. This is my third time. And the first time I read it, I didn't really get it. But I knew there was something important. The second time, it really sort of opened some doors. And this third time, I picked it up because I knew I was going to be walking through the egg for intimacy. And I just felt like, you know, I need to go back and read this. And this is an author named George MacDonald, who's a Scottish author in the 1800s. And he wrote a bunch of novels, which are probably not the best novels. They're interesting reads. But what he's most known for is fairy tales. And he wrote a fairy tale, an adult fairy tale, not for kids. By the way, this is an aside. Fairy tales were originally read by adults, interestingly enough. And then they got shelved to children's only. And that's a whole other story. But his fairy tale is for adults. And it's called Fantasties of Fairy Romance. And I'm just going to read just a tiny little thing to you of it. But it just, you'll see it when I read to you. But the main character is a guy named Anodos. And Anodos is just in his bedroom. And all of a sudden he wakes up and finds that his bedroom is out in the middle of the woods. And the little water where he got his water to wash his face has become a spring. And he has to follow the river out of that. And he enters fairyland. And he meets all these really strange adventures there. One of which is so haunting, he finds this beautiful woman encased, entombed in alabaster rock, which is sort of opaque and he can see in. And he figures out that if he sings to her over and over again, she starts to move. And finally the rock cracks, break, and she flees. And, you know, part of the story is he has to go and find her now. But there's one section I want to read to you that just so stung me. And in it, Anodos travels and finds a palace in which he finds a special room with just his name on it. And in this palace, there's this massive library, and he goes for days and just reads the books. And in the books are these books are all other fairy tales. So in the fairy tale of Fantasties, he actually finds a library where he's reading other fairy tales. See where this is going? It gets really unusual. And in one of these fairy tales, he reads about a very strange place where the women all have wings and the men have arms. And it's sort of like our world, but really, really different. Like instead of the water reflecting the sky reflects what's down here. I mean, things like that are sort of turned upside down. But what I want to read to you is what happens when in that land a man and a woman meet each other. Before they die, they instinctively search for a spot like the place of their birth. And having found one that satisfies them, they lie down, fold their wings around them if they be women, or cross their arms over their breasts if they be men, just as if they are going to sleep. And so sleep, indeed. The sign or cause of coming death is an indescribable longing for something. They know not what, which seizes them and drives them into solitude, consuming them within till the body fails. When a youth and a maiden look too deep into each other's eyes, this longing seizes and possesses them. And instead of drawing nearer to each other, they wander away, each alone, into solitary places and die of their desire. And when I read that, something just shot out in me. And I went, what in the world would it feel like to have a longing so interminable and so unquenchable that you died under the weight of it? And then I began to reflect, you know, that's what the unspeakable ache feels like. In fact, MacDonald, all throughout this book, is making references to these aches and what we do with them. And it's in the landscape of the fairyland that he sort of confronts that. What's it like to be stung so deeply with that ache that you don't know what to do with it, that you want to die? And then as I reflected on my own life, that's exactly what's happened. And as I've listened to many, many stories, that's what we do. It does feel like we're going to die. That's what the ache at times feels like. And what do we do with that?
One more point. The transition today into, anyway, that's where I confronted it this week, but the transition today in from the ache for fame and the ache for intimacy has a very personal note, and I want to speak about that just for a second before we launch into it. And this will be kind of a heart transition. Let's see, how do I want to say this? Okay. My own sense of intimacy with an older man as I was younger, with peers, or with a woman, with a girl when I was, you know, during my adolescence, was so disappointed at so many levels. I didn't know what to do with that pain. And so my instinctive response was to submerge, kind of like what we talked about last week. I just pushed it down, you know? And but when you push down an ache, it doesn't go away. It just blows out sideways, often through another color of the ache. And another color of this ache is the ache for fame. And what I began to realize several years ago is that my ache for intimacy sort of came out of my ache for fame, because there was this deep wanting not only to be impactful but to be noticed. And what I began to confuse was the fact that being noticed by a crowd was what I thought intimacy was, because that's all I knew how to get it. And as I've talked to other people about this, I feel like this is really, really common, particularly among sort of stars or famous people or people with a big platform, whether they're a minister or an author or a politician. Their only way in which they can experience real intimacy, they think, is this way. Well, of course, it's not intimacy at all. You know, and the trick comes because you may be admired for doing something well in front of people. You may be noticed because of a skill, but that's different from being drawn into the heart of somebody else. And it's a close second, but actually becomes an illusion. And then what happens is, you know, and I experienced this in my own life, as I try to make myself more and more noticed in the eyes of others, I actually distance myself more and more. And I think that happens to many people who find themselves in some sort of upfront position. Your actual pursuit of fame drives you away from intimacy. It's the exact opposite of what you think you're going to get. So anyway, those are just some, I wanted to pull that out because I thought that was just a really, again, how the ache surfaced in my own life this week, just sort of thinking through it. So, let's move on to this now. Let's talk about first encounters with the ache for intimacy. And we're just, again, going to start into this and sort of, again, sort of pull it up and think about it and sort of see where it goes. What's the ache for intimacy? So let me give you just a couple of sentences, sort of a running, working kind of understanding, and we'll kind of go from there. It's the longing to know the heart of another and to be known by them. And in that unveiling, a connection happens, a bond that's both wonderful and strong. And in that bond, we feel safe and alive. So again, it's the longing to be known and to know, and in that, a connection, a bond happens, and in that bond, we feel safe and we feel alive. That's the ache for intimacy. So I want to enter the door of that this way. I thought this was probably as good a way as any. Remember the Titans, okay? Probably most of you have seen it. At some point, came out in the year 2000, the story of the T.C. Williams High School, which was begun in Northern Virginia, suburb of D.C., during the court-mandated segregation. And a white school and a black school shut down and they merged. Well, you can imagine what that first year of the school was like. Well, imagine the football team during summer practices. It was a disaster. It was rife with racism and hatred, and yet the coach did really an incredible job pulling them together, and they ended up going to the state championship and winning. It's actually the true story behind the movie Remember the Titans. So what I want to do is, I want to watch just a couple of segments of how they wrestle with this and use that as an entrance point into this. So,
what I'm going to do, let me pull this up. And does anybody here know how to cut off the lights, or should I go do that? If you don't, that's okay. I can run this up while this is doing this. We're going to pull this down. And this is now in summer practice. And there's a man named, a young man named Gary and Julius, one white and one black, and they're both sort of leaders on, amongst the blacks and the whites, and they're going to have a they're going to have sort of a discussion about this. Do I have the lights yet? Randy, you're so brave. If you will, do you see where it says that little board up on the... do you see right there at the top where it says, yes, right, that's it. It just should say, hit house, and just hit wherever it says off. Does it say off anywhere? There you go. Awesome. You're so good. Okay, here we go. Let's listen in.
I'm Gary. You're Julius. Let's get some particulars and just get this over with, all right? Let's say this.
Yeah. No matter what I say, you ain't going to never know nothing about
me. Hey, listen. I ain't running any more of these 3 days, okay?
Well, what I got to say, you really don't want to hear, because honesty ain't too high for you people's priorities, right?
Honesty? You want honesty? All right, honestly, I think you're nothing. Nothing but a pure waste of God-given talent. You don't listen to nobody, man. Not even Doc or Boone. Shiver push on the line every time, man. You blow right past them. Push them. Pull them. Do something. You can't run over everybody in this league. And every time you do, you leave one of your teammates hanging out to dry. Me in particular.
Why should I give a hoot about you? Huh? Or anybody else out there? You want to talk about a waste, you be captain, right?
Right.
Captain's supposed to be the leader, right?
Right.
You got a job?
I have a job.
You been doing your job?
I've been doing my job.
Then why don't you tell your white buddies to block for Red Feather? Because they have not blocked for him. We're a plum nickel, and you know it. Nobody blames. Yourself included. I'm supposed to wear myself out for the team? What team? No. No, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look out for myself, and I'm going to get mine.
Say, man. That's the worst attitude I ever heard.
Attitude reflect leadership, Captain.
Let's go. Wake up, gentlemen. It's late. It's 3 a.m. All right, listen up. You will follow Doc, myself, and the other coaches. We're going to take a little run through the woods. If you get lost along the way, don't bother coming back to camp. Just hitchhike your hind parts on home. Any questions?
Coach, it's a high school football team. We're not Marines here.
Let's go.
Anybody know what this place is? This is Gettysburg. This is where they fought the Battle of Gettysburg. 50,000 men died right here on this field, fighting the same fight that we're still fighting amongst ourselves today. This green field right here, painted red, bubbling with blood, young boys, smoke and hot lead going right through their bodies. Listen to their souls, man. I killed my brother with malice in my heart. Hatred destroyed my family. You listen. Lesson from the dead. If we don't come together right now on this hollow ground, we too will be destroyed. Just like they were. I don't care if you like each other or not, but you will respect each other. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you will. Play this game like men.
Okay, they, of course, do come together in spring practices. I want to show one more little clip. Sorry, Randy. I want to show one more very brief clip. And they have an incredible season. And right before the state championship game, tragedy strikes. This is, and Gary, the white young man there, ends up in a car accident. He's paralyzed from the waist down. And you're going to watch when Julius, the black young black man in that kind of altercation there, come in and begin to try and speak and comfort Gary. So here we go. This is right before the state championship game.
How you doing, son?
You all right? You all right? How's it doing?
Not too good. Not too good. How bad is he doing? How bad is he?
Oh, man.
How bad is he? He's paralyzed from the waist down.
Don't say that to me. Don't say that to me. I'm with you, dude. I'm sorry.
He doesn't want to see anybody but you, Julius.
Yes, ma'am.
You're strong.
Yes, ma'am.
Those tears are not going to make my boy walk again.
Only Ken's allowed in here.
Alice? Are you blind? Don't you see the family resemblance? That's my brother.
All right, you can hit those lights. And unfortunately, I am going to lose power here at some point. We'll just run it out till. Let's see if that comes up. So anyway, is that coming up? Yeah, there we go. Anyway, if this drops off the screen, we'll just go with it. You know, that's part of the experience of this whole team was something happened between Juice and Gary that forever changed them. They actually were best friends until Gary died in his late 20s. Both are profoundly moved by the experience of becoming brothers and feeling what each other feels about us. And you know, guys usually don't say it directly, but they said it obliquely. Did you catch that? When you know, Julius goes, I want you to come live in my neighborhood. And, you know, Gary goes, don't you see the family resemblance? What these two men were experiencing was the ache for intimacy touched. And it was just profound. It was transforming. The ache for intimacy can be opened by many more direct doors, perhaps more compelling doors. But y'all, I think a good place to start is here with doing something together, like going side by side. Because going side by side, all of a sudden the two of them found themselves going face to face. And the activity here was the sport was football, and you know, it just forced them to come together despite all the prejudice and hatred at the time. I like this as a way to start putting words to the ache for intimacy, because it's a place that's extremely common that we can sort of all at least begin to think about. Even if you've never played a sport, it doesn't really matter. It can be any kind of activity with others, even on a job. This can happen. Any kind of team. I want to just give you, and these are just a couple of my own encounters. Ooh, this is still going. A couple of my own encounters with this. And then let's open the scriptures a little bit, and then we'll start the discussion. But this has happened to me. I'll tell a brief story of how this happened to me coaching, since we're talking about sports, and then a brief story about how this happened to me in the classroom this week. So, coaching, I coached cross country for many, many years, for 17 years, if you can believe that's a long time to coach anything. And my experience over and over with these young men was that, you know, it was the experience of being just pushed relentlessly and sometimes brutally by the coach. I used to tell him, if you don't hate me at least one day out of the season, I haven't done my job. You know, I really push them. And at the end of the season, we would all gather in the Steeplechase Bell Tower. It became our tradition. And I would just say, okay, y'all, let's tell stories about the season. And they would always tell some just incredibly distressing or incredibly funny stories from the season. Usually there were stories they had hidden from me, the coach, and those are the funniest of all. And they would all come out. But towards the end of it, I would go, all the seniors get a chance to speak. So what do y'all want to say? And it would always get very serious, and they would never talk about wins, losses. They would never talk about races. They would never talk about times. They would never go there. It was always about something happened. They were going side by side, and all of a sudden they started going face to face. And that's what they spoke about in their own language. They always went there. And it always intrigued me and surprised me that they would do that with almost no prompting from me. They really wanted to speak about that. They were trying to pull up the unspeakable ache that had been sort of touched and try and put words to it. I remember one particular season where this happened, and it was right after the thunderstorm and a rainbow came out, and we were sort of speaking, and one young man who was really, really just mischievously playful, if you can think of your own person like that, and he was always smiling and happy, and he was a senior, and this was his last time, and he just started sobbing. He was just like, I can't believe this is over. And it was just like something had really touched him very deeply. And it was, again, that the curtain of intimacy had been drawn back, and it really left him trembling.
just recently in class, I teach still at the Academy of the Men in the Bible class, and I did this thing for them about the sixth week, and I have 20 young men in the classroom. And it's always an interesting 45 or 70 minutes, if you can imagine what goes on in there. And about 6 or 7 weeks in during the class, we always do what are called our life graphs. And I tell them, here's what I want you to do. Take a piece of graph paper and think about your ups and downs in life. And then just chart them out. But here's the trick. You can do is put whatever you want to down there. There are no boundaries or no rules. But just know that everybody gets to come up here and talk about their graph. Right? So it's up to you, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to put down, whatever you don't want to put down. That's your choice. But that's where this is going. And what happens? First of all, they're like, they're kind of like, huh? And then they get into it, and they start doing it. They've never done anything like this before. Most of them have never reflected on their life like this. And they start to learn many things about their own stories to do that. But then, when they start listening to each other's stories, and all of a sudden, you find, you know, and you can remember when you were in high school, you had certain stereotypes about a person, like black, white, they're this way, and all of a sudden, you hear the story, and you just go, what? I had no idea. I mean, and some of the young men just volunteered some really, really difficult things in their lives, as well as some kind of amazing things that happened to them. And you can just watch the young men literally listen to each other differently. All of a sudden, what's happening? The curtain's being pulled a little back, and they're looking at each other beyond the stereotypes. It's transforming. They're experiencing that ache for intimacy all of a sudden being touched, which young men have a real hard time going to, but they long for it. You know, underneath, and let me speak about this just with sports, just a bit more, and then I want to go to the scriptures. What we desire in a team sport is of course winning and success, but there's more to this. Underneath the top layer are powerful undercurrents of feeling connected to others, of entering their lives in a way that lifts us up beyond the humdrum of or disconnection of life. Of course, there are other transcendent forces at work in sport, the desire for adventure and quest, the desire for impact and significance. But I think the drive to be team and to experience the wonder of that is getting really close to the ache for intimacy. But there's always a danger. It's idolatry, and let me try and express it this way. The danger is to mistake the image with the reality. The danger is to mistake the door with the house. My own desire to be involved in sports, and then the coach landed me right in the smack dab in the middle of this danger. Sports for me took on a mythic and transcendent character precisely because my own experience of it growing up were really, really disappointing. I still remember, some of y'all maybe have had this experience, the dreaded moment in elementary school when you got picked for teams. Everybody put in your own experience here. And I always ended up being picked near the end. And after a while, I'm like, I hate this. And I was just kind of physically uncoordinated at the time. I wasn't seen as sort of like the wanted one. And because of that, there was this sense of not being sort of, you know, it didn't touch that. I felt really disconnected. Just one more quick experience of that. When I was in the seventh grade, I really wanted to play football, but I was just too scared to try out. And I can remember the guys talking about football, like the plays and the lingo, and it sounded like a secret code to me. Have you ever been around like people that are like have this little secret language and you're sort of unintentionally or intentionally locked out? That's what I felt like. And I really, you know, at that age in my life, the sports seemed to me part the primary entrance into whatever this was that I ached for. And of course, coming back and coaching, it sort of hooked into that. But sadly enough, it's the door. It's not the house. And when you do that, of course, coaching began to take a lot more of my time and energy
disconnecting me from my teaching even, and then from, you know, my own family and marriage at times in really, really destructive ways. I was looking for connection, for intimacy, but let me tell you, whatever you look for to for that at some level is going to become just a dried up well. It can't be a spring of living water. I believe this is one of the reasons why sports feel so mythic and transcendent to others, not just me. You put a weight on it that far outweighs the actual reality. We mistake the door for the house we are asked to enter. If you can imagine a child being lost, an orphan out in the cold, and all of a sudden somebody opens the door with a warm fire and food inside, and they said, come on in. And they just stand at the door thinking, the best it's going to be is, this is as close as I can get to the food and the fire. And at some level, that's the tragedy here, mistaking the door for the house. Instead of waiting out in the cold, we need to leave the door and enter the room. So what does it mean to enter the room here? Let me just speak finally about, did I lose power? I lost power. Let me speak finally here about turning to the scriptures with the ache. And I want to just go to two places, and I'm going to read, just make a few comments out of John 17:20, and then out of Isaiah 30. And my point here is not to state some answers, like here's how you do it. I don't think progress forward in these aches and really connecting them to their true source, it's really the way to go. I think the way, at least in my life, the way to go is begin to ask questions. The way forward is always asking better questions, even if you don't know what the answer is. So what I want to do is I just want to offer some these two suggestive scriptures with some questions. How do we move from the door into the house? Now, we've used sports here, but you can use anything. How do we move from the door into the house that's beckoning us? John 17, and I've used this passage before, is Jesus' high priestly prayer, is what it's commonly called. He just prays this right before he dies. It's remarkable in so many ways. But in verse 20, he prays for himself, for his disciples. In verse 20, he starts to pray for others and that are going to believe through the message of the disciples. And I want you to listen to his words with the backdrop of what you just saw and remember the Titans. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me. May they be brought to complete unity, to let the world know that you sent me and have loved them, even as you have loved me. There's many things you could say here, but it sounds vaguely similar in some way to what that Titans football team was struggling to do, to come together and to experience something like that. It is a oneness, a unity that transcended whatever sense of disconnection or separation. This is how they began to find the intimacy of brotherhood. What if football is the door and this is the reality? Is that possible? And if it's possibly true, how in the world do we get there? Like, what steps do you start moving towards? How do you even start doing that with a few people? Here he prays that we will be drawn into the circle of intimacy out of which all creation began. Jesus wants us to feel the same intimacy that he has with the Father. What would it be like to be drawn into an inner circle like that? What would that taste like? What would it mean to begin to enter it, that house and begin to feel the warmth of the fire and taste the food, and all of a sudden find others at the door just looking in, going, could I come in? I think that may be a bit of what Jesus is speaking about here. But how do you start? Is this real? Can this happen? Let's flip it around. Let me take you to Isaiah 30. And I want to flip it around because I want to ask a different question here in Isaiah 30. And I actually mentioned this, I think, verse last week. And in this passage, the prophet Isaiah, the Lord is saying, you know, basically the Israel, why are you running away from me? Don't you know I want to bless you and father you and you know, but you keep running away. Why do you keep running away from me? Now I'll pick it up at verse 15. In repentance and rest is your salvation, in quietness and trust is your strength, but you would have none of it. You said, no, we'll flee on horses, therefore you will flee. You said, we will ride up on swift horses, therefore your pursuers will be swift. 1,000 will flee at the threat of one, at the threat of five, you will all flee away, till you are left like a flagstaff on a mountain, like a banner on a hill. Yet the Lord longs to be gracious to you. He rises to show you compassion, for the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are those who wait on Him. So, instead of speaking about our own ache for intimacy, what happens when we begin to even think about the fact that God aches for our presence? That He longs to be gracious to us? That He aches to draw us to Himself and just wants to have compassion on us. And then we're supposed to actually stay there long enough that we can just bathe in it. What is that? What would that feel like? What would that change? To know that He aches for my company, my heart. And of course, Isaiah says the way into the door, into the house here, is kind of what we talked about last week. God is the God of justice. And because of that, He will bless those who wait on Him. What do we need to forsake in order to taste the Father's ache for us? You know, this is Lenten season. What do we need to let go in order that we can receive? What would that look like? What would that feel like?